Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
I'm a presenter. Let me take you on a journey. Marching through parks.
Climbing trees. Oh, fuck.
From the top of a mountain.
Well, the water was the sea.
From up in the sky.
From inside the belly of a member of the Bee Gees. I'm not sure which one. I'll be whispering into a microphone, and I'll be sat down thinking and talking in this rather more pensive voice.
I'll be riding a unicycle and taking a flight,
talking to some people you might have heard of, but also a lot of people that you definitely haven't. Who the hell is this person? Because what I discover doesn't even matter a jot. Because it's all about the journey! And that is modern narrative media for you, or as we like to call it, content creation. Whale Creek State Park in Hurricane, Utah. Yes, it's a long way from London, but a very beautiful place. And there's a reservoir in front of me that you can swim in, and some picnic benches, some jet skis, and lots of very, very big cars. I am here to introduce this episode of Park Date, which features the very brilliant Ben Gomori. Ben is a producer and DJ. You should check out his stuff. He has remixed the likes of Morcheeba and Orchestra Baobab. Giles Peterson is a big fan of his. He's done stuff with Huge Tunes, Stern's Edits. He runs the Monologues Records label himself, and he's also responsible for the Pitch Black playback sessions. I knew I was going to mess that up. I could record this over and over again until I got this right, and I just never would. But the purpose of Ben's night is that you can listen to music in the dark, and it furthers your appreciation of it because you're just concentrating on the sound. So we talked about that, and we talked about his DJing appearances, and you can catch Ben. He plays regularly in London and Berlin, and he's been playing in Ibiza this summer as well. So do check out his live performances and his remixes. He's a great guy and a great DJ, and we're going to have a talk about the music that inspired him in this episode of Park Date. If you like it, please leave us a review. The best review will win a prize, I promise. I'm going to get some priceless Utah granite, sandstone, or whatever the hell these beautiful mountains are made of. Take it back and give it to one of you guys as a prize for whoever leaves the best review. The socials are at Park Date Podcast. Please enjoy. Welcome to Hackney Downs. I'm here with Ben Gomori. Ben, thank you for joining me today. How are you doing?
Hello, mate. Yeah, I'm good. Feeling fresh.
Excellent.
Got the like dying embers of, I don't think you can call this summer really, can you? But Like, it's an all right day.
Exactly.
For England. So, yeah, nice to be
here. We're not getting wet. Exactly. And we haven't seen each other for a while. It's really nice to see you again. And,
likewise.
With the pandemic, I think a lot of people, it was hard to kind of catch up as much as you wanted to. So, it's good to...
It was difficult to meet people in that pandemic, wasn't it? Famously so, yeah.
Yeah, well, it became illegal. You couldn't see your friends because it was breaking the law.
So much like trauma just still like lingering in the back of all of our brains, I think.
Exactly, and we were just saying as well, weren't we? It's, I was saying to you, I kind of reached the point where I thought, actually, I want to do more collaborative things. Maybe I don't want to just be sat at home every single day writing books, because it reminded me too much of the pandemic being alone. You were kind of saying the same thing, weren't you?
I think it's really important for any creative person to, you obviously need your alone time, you need lots of it, but you need other people to bounce ideas off, and especially if you're like a textbook extrovert like me and you kind of get a lot of your energy from interactions with other people, but also aside from the kind of like very direct benefits of just like, you know, working with someone or exchanging ideas with them, I kind of realized, I think during the pandemic, maybe a bit before that, I had kind of retreated from the social side of the music stuff I do, the sort of scene that I DJ and produce in, for a couple of reasons. And I was kind of just dealing with people mostly through like digital interactions, so still very much involved, but it was all just sort of emailing people and stuff. And just realised after a while that, especially with something like, dance music, which is all about socialising and, you know, being together with people, you have to be part of the community, and you have to be meeting people, making connections. Otherwise, you're just, you know, someone streaming online from your bedroom, like we all had to in the pandemic. So I have also been making lots more efforts just to meet people who I'd only spoken to on like email or DMs or whatever, meet new people who I admire their work or like what they're doing, and also just trying to do a few more things which are in that world, but just do them sort of for fun. So like, I've been producing music now for like 12 years or something, and I started out, before I was doing it on my own, I was learning through other people and collaborating with them, and since I learned to do it myself, I literally have not collaborated with anyone directly, like in person, and that needs to change. So I'm sort of looking to do a bit more of that, but mainly just have fun with it and just be like, let's just get together and like piss about with some equipment and don't worry about what the end result's going to be, and just like enjoy spending time together and like being inspired and listening to music, and then just pressing some buttons and see if anything comes out of it.
Which is exactly the kind of line of thinking that I've been having recently. Just thought, well, let's make some stuff, let's kind of experiment with podcasting and maybe some TV and film and see kind of what comes out of it. And maybe you have those points where actually you can get like something that you wouldn't get from if you were just working by yourself. You have that spark between people that you didn't really expect something to come out of it, and then maybe that's how the magic is
always magic you have to
I'll give it a stroke.
You have to open yourselves up to all the different ways of creating, I think, and be open to ideas coming from anywhere, anytime, and fostering those conditions for that to happen. So that could be collaborating with someone. It could be, you know, there's times that I've been in a different environment to my studio, my laptop, like on a train or in some Airbnb somewhere or something, and I find myself very inspired because my brain's just not in its like usual rut of like, you're in your studio in your house and it's this big and this is what it sounds like and these are the things at your disposal, and also you've got to go and hang out the washing and blah blah blah. So just to put yourselves in different environments and scenarios, I think, is really, really important. I think too many of us just forget about that and don't do it enough.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I remember reading about a lot of musicians who said they were inspired to write songs while they were on the road as well. Mm. Some of the greatest songs ever have been written in hotels, haven't they? When musicians have been in a different place and they've kind of got in a different headspace. So sometimes being away can be very, very inspirational, can't it?
Yeah. I mean, down to like, you know, I remember seeing something that said like, if you commute to work, you should switch up your route every now and then, because it really helps your brain open up new sort of creative pathways just by having a slightly a changed your routine. But then the flip side of that is I also read another thing which said that how important ritual can be for creative processes. So that that could be something really small, and that could be something you can combine with changing a scenario. But it can be whatever you do, lighting some candles or just something which tells your brain, okay, now we're switching over into creative mode. So there's something to be said for a bit of both. But as with anything in life, it's all about, you know, moderation and
indeed
and contrast.
Indeed. Well, should we go for a little go for a little stroll, shall we, Ben? We're joined as well by our old friend The Wind today, and new friend Trains, because we're walking
Trains and walking. Rustling autumn leaves.
Rustling autumn,
a real vibe, a real atmospheric touch.
Exactly. So there's all kinds of interesting background noise, which sometimes makes this podcast sound fantastic, and at other times can be very annoying in the edit.
It's going to be a vibe. It's going to be an autumn vibe, and
indeed,
really bring that to life, I think.
Indeed. So those collaborations and stuff you're talking about, Ben, what's it led you to recently? Because you seem to have been quite prolific recently. You've been doing. Do you think you've been in a kind of spell where you've felt like you know you've been inspired? You've been doing a lot of DJing and making music and stuff recently, haven't you?
Yeah. I guess some of it on the production side, I guess it's a little bit of an illusion, because I've just had a real backlog of stuff that I made, I guess, most of it during the pandemic. But to be honest, I feel like some of it was even before. Just labels can be very, very slow at putting out stuff. So I'm literally still waiting on some stuff that I made several years ago to come out, or people have been asking me for material and I've shown them some stuff which never got signed, so there's stuff from even further back which has been coming out. I just released something that I made like 8 years ago, which has been doing quite well, but at the time I made it was like just very kind of not in vogue style, and I just sat on it and forgot about it for years, and then went back to it and tweaked it a little bit, and someone really liked it and put out. So,
brilliant.
I actually, the last few months, I feel like I've really barely made any music, because I've been away a lot. I've been DJing a bit more. Summer's always just like quite busy, I guess, with like fun engagements. So yeah, I'm kind of itching to get back to things. And last night I finally sat down and started a couple of new things. So yeah, there's a little bit of illusion with that. I just got a backlog of stuff that's still coming out, and things that no one wanted to sign, which I'm now just releasing on my own label.
I like
Monologues Records.
So Ben's got this amazing shirt on. I'm gonna have to buy one of these Monologues Records.
You can't, I'm afraid. It's a limited edition.
Oh,
one
wow.
of one. So this is
it looks fantastic.
I was looking for
very cool dark blue shirt with Monologues Records.
Thank you. It's so apparently what it technically is well, the section in the vintage shop in Amsterdam I went to, they said this is Japanese workwear. And the brand that was underneath, the whole reason that motivated me to get a patch made in my label's logo, was a word, I'm not going to say what the word was, but it's a word that is a homonym for a word that you definitely don't want to be wearing on your jacket.
Right,
so I was like, oh, why don't I look into getting a patch made? Anyway, the patch was like 10 quid on Etsy, and then a guy sewed it on for me for like 2 quid at like the local tailoring whatever shop.
So real.
And
well,
I was like, I've got a one of one
awesome.
Edition. Thank you. I'm really happy with it. I think customizing vintage stuff is now going to be like my thing, because what can be better than having something that's like completely unique and, you know, you're recycling at the same time.
Exactly. Yeah.
So
double win.
Yeah, that's the story of that. So I guess I have been busy, and yeah, DJing has been picking up, and a part of that has been that I kind of decided to more and more be trying to make my own luck and opportunities, rather than waiting for someone to book you, try and put on your own things. That's always my kind of advice to people.
That's the one of the most annoying things with creativity, isn't it? Waiting to be greenlit.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Very, very annoying.
And that's why I think you need both. You need to, everyone should have at least one platform where they can put something out themselves without anyone else having to gatekeep it. So yeah, I've been trying to put on a few more of my own nights. It's sort of, I haven't done anything for a long time, especially in London. I've never really done anything because my kind of, you know, as you get older, your mates stop going clubbing so much, and it's harder to, you know, you want to build these things from a sort of community upwards.
Yeah.
But now I'm in a position where like a few people are sort of willing to, because I've got a, you know, a good platform with the label and like with my following, people are a bit more open to giving me opportunities to sort of put on nights and give me budgets to book guests and stuff like that. So doing a bit more of that, but yeah, just trying to create my own things,
yeah,
more
definitely.
And more opportunities.
Should sit down here for a minute. You were playing, weren't you, at Sisyphus recently and lots of other.
I played there in May. I played on my birthday.
Oh, nice! How was that night?
It was. I mean, it was always great. It was. I played there like, I think that was the fifth time I played there now, and it's like absolutely my favourite place to play in the world. The room I play in, the Winter Garden, it's just like I can play stuff there that like I can't play anywhere else, and people just go with it. So absolutely love playing there. Yeah, the last one was, it was the least busy I've done, but that kind of came with its own rewards. It was one of their, it was Labor Day, I think, or something like that. I always get confused. Was it May Day? Was the one at end of May? It was a bank holiday. I think it was just one of those weird like religious holidays that we don't have here.
May Day in Berlin is always crazy, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's a famous
things,
one.
Things get a bit
this was something like lively. Ascension Day or something like that. I don't know. Anyway, they had a bank holiday on the Thursday or Wednesday, and they did one of their parties where they stayed open from Wednesday until Monday. Mm-hmm. And I played on the evening of the bank holiday or the day after or something. So it had been busy in the day, and then a lot of people had to go back to work on a Friday. So it was, yeah, the whole place was the sort of least busy I'd seen it ever before, but it was still just so much fun. And yeah, when I say there's like rewards that come with that, you know, it took the pressure off to play like at a certain level and energy, and it meant I could sort of go a bit deeper later on somehow, and you have a few more interactions with people because they feel like they can come and like speak to you when it's not completely packed. So yeah, I'm just itching to get back there. I don't know when it will be, but yeah, it's been like kind of a couple of times a year usually, so fingers crossed to have me back soon.
Yeah, clubbing in Berlin is so different to every other city really, isn't it?
It's
such a part of the city's kind of DNA.
It is, yeah. It's just so, everything's so permissive there, and it just makes for an atmosphere, especially because it's cheap as well. You know, there's just always something going on, and something I miss in London that was very like part of the fabric, excuse the pun, of the of like the city and the culture and the clubbing here, was that there was loads of amazing weekday nights, and that just doesn't really exist much anymore. There's sort of things at the Lion and the Lamb, but I think they usually finish at midnight on a Thursday. They're like really fun, but there used to be things like, you know, there was Movement on a Thursday, like drum and bass night at Bar Rumba with like all the Bristol crew, Swerve at Wednesday, at the end of Wednesdays, Fabio's night. There was lots of
Trash
different things.
Trash,
of course,
Monday, wasn't it?
And I feel like the reason we don't have that anymore is because it's so expensive to live in London that there are far fewer, like, you know, most or lots of people I know who are creative people or have a creative endeavor, like a DJ or an artist or whatever they are, most of them, certainly more so than 20 years ago, they have to have another job to make ends meet, and that means they have to be in work often at like 10 a.m. You know, I know someone who's, they're an incredibly busy up and coming DJ, they're like, their diary's rammed, but they do like 2 or 3 days a week at a social media agency. So it just means that I think there's less, a bit less freedom for people. There's less people who, fewer people rather, who are able to go out and just have it on a weeknight.
Yeah.
I think the Sunday scene's been getting better again. But yeah, I miss that. And I think that kind of element is still a bit more alive in Berlin because you can get by on so little and
yeah.
people have, you know, atypical work lives or they just DJ a few nights a week
yeah.
and they can live off it.
It's funny you mentioned about weekdays as well. As I spent a lot of time in clubs when I was younger, not quite so much now, but weeknights were always the best.
Yeah.
In fact, to the extent that I remember when I was younger, especially when I was a student, you wouldn't go out at the weekend. The weekend was kind of for other people, like we would say for locals. It's probably a bit unfair of us to say that back in the day, but I think everyone understands what that meant. Like, if you love music and you loved going out, you would want to go out on a Wednesday or a Monday or something.
Yeah, you knew you weren't going to get like loads of like
piss
heads
yeah.
and like stag dudes or
yeah,
like,
Saturday
tourists
night
who didn't
all,
know what they're
yeah,
going to.
You always wanted to avoid like Friday and Saturday. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah,
so I miss that. But yeah, Berlin is just still. I still haven't in recent times sort of experienced like crowds and energies like, you know, I do when I go there usually. Yeah. They're definitely about, but I just, it's been a while in London since I've been to something where I really felt an electric atmosphere. People tell me that Unfold at Fold is like the one if you want, it's like feels like Berlin or Berghain in London, but it's like pretty brutally hard techno and that's not my thing.
Yeah.
It's as much as I'm kind of curious to go and see it.
I always like
Safari.
Always, yeah, exactly. I always like Corsica Studios. I thought they were doing
Corsica's
really,
always solid, yeah.
Really
yeah.
interesting stuff. And yeah, great to see them still going. But isn't it incredible how, you know, you go to King's Cross now and sure Ben you'll remember like the cross and all those kind of things that were happening back then and
you're getting me to like one of my angry grind my gears moments.
Yeah, Cross Central Festival. And now, well, for those who don't know, this area of King's Cross that used to be this clubbing mecca of London is now a very polished shopping centre.
And there's never anyone in any of the shops.
No.
I really like Cold Drops Yard and I do generally really like what they've done with the development and there are some great things there like Voices Radio. I played for them recently. Spirit Land is like fun. It has some great DJs.
I need to go to Spirit Land. Yeah, I've heard good things about it.
Yeah. They used to do really good food as well and then the kitchen closed during the pandemic. I don't know if they reopened it, but I just think it's completely ridiculous that they didn't earmark some space to continue clubbing heritage there. They've got all these, there's this like little gallery in like one of the tunnels where it's got a little potted history of the area with like pictures by Dave Swindells, who's like a great club photographer and used to be Time Out nightlife editor, and some words from somewhere, I can't remember who, but you know, sort of lauding it as like, this is where, you know, clubbing was really like one of its epicentres in the UK. And they sort of want to trade off that goodwill and heritage, but then all they've allowed there to be is Lafayette, which is they do have DJs there, but it's not a club thing, it's more of a gig place, and I think it's licensed maybe only till 2, but there's no, absolutely no reason that I can see that there shouldn't be a soundproof, well run club or two there.
Yeah,
because you know it's basically dead after, you know, 11, and why wouldn't you want people coming there and enjoying it? You know, the flats are all kind of, you know, spaced out from it, and I think a lot of them are empty. My friend I know is a property journalist told me that at the time they were being built, lots of them were just being bought up by sort of foreign wealth funds and investors, and, you know,
we're
just sitting on them. I wish, I hope that at some point a club comes back there, because that was some of my absolutely best times there. Like, going to, when they had Secret Sunday every other Sunday on the roof at Canvas, it was just like absolute magic. And I was lucky enough to be resident at some nights at the Cross and the Quay for a while, which were always just so fun, and just great crowd. And when they did those TDK Cross Central
TDK
festivals,
Cross
where
Central,
they had
exactly.
all the venues and the courtyards, was absolutely amazing.
They were amazing. It was on Bank Holiday, August Bank Holiday weekend, wasn't it? And yeah, I remember great 06, 05, 06. They were fantastic.
So good. Yeah, I only got to go to one, but I was like, this is this is absolutely amazing, because you had like the good bits of having an outdoor festival kind of vibe, but then you could just be like, let's go into one of three clubs, each of which has like multiple rooms. Yeah, so good, so good. So I hope things come back like that. It is definitely encouraging, and this was something that I hoped would happen as a result of the pandemic and working from home, and so many like central London spaces being empty, is that it does seem that developers and landlords are realizing that, like, well, we can make rent from hiring this place out as a club, or letting it be developed as a club. So Orange Yard opened like before the pandemic, actually, which was like the first club in central London for like underground music, like as part of its offering, that I can remember in absolutely ages. So that was encouraging. And now Here's just opened, which is like absolutely enormous space, like three stories underground, which is being run by the team behind Percolate and some other people. I just read about a place that's apparently opening in Piccadilly called Neon. I read about it in Faith magazine, but I couldn't find anything about it on the internet, but hopefully that's coming soon. There's something special about going out in central London. Obviously there's lots of advantages to all the clubs that have popped up around the periphery, you know.
Well, there's lots near you in Tottenham as well, isn't there?
The Core's shut down, sadly, but there is still a place, I forget what the name is, but it's up by Beavertown Brewery, kind of behind Tottenham Hale, which is a nice space. And, you know, there's places like MOT in sort of Surrey Quays sort of area. There's a bunch of places like that around the edge, which, yeah, you can, you know, have really loud sound.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Don't get people walking up to it by mistake, you know, that everyone is there, is there because they know they've come for the music, or someone's told them about it, whatever. So those places are great and absolutely bring something new, but they tend to be warehouse conversions. And for me, having grown up with places that were sort of modelled more as clubs, with sort of nooks and crannies and bits of staging, and I find those places help you kind of forget the real world better, for me personally anyway. They give me more of a sense of escapism, rather than like I am in a warehouse which has been, you know, kitted out for a clubbing purpose. So I hope for more spaces like that, and
yeah,
I think it's great that we're now starting to have both once again, and yeah, long may that dichotomy sort of continue.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I know what you mean. I do remember when I first came to London about, was it like 06, 07, something like that, there was a lot of warehouse parties at that stage, while Hackney was kind of gentrifying. Lots of kind of warehouses I remember going to, and Bethnal Green and Dalston and stuff, where you would see these ad hoc parties, which were, I guess, essentially illegal. But they were very fun places to be.
Basically the time that I finished uni and started working in London. And while I was at uni, I started working for doing sort of bits of PR stuff for a promoter called Will Patterson, who then was, he was like, he promoted very big, like some of the biggest hard house nights in the UK. He did like Brixton Academy three times a year and stuff. And he also had a club in Vauxhall called Hidden. But then he set up Eastern Electrics with Rob Starr, who owns the Star of Hackney Downs.
Star of Hackney Downs, which is just at the edge of this park.
And who then was promoting Mullet Over with Geddes. And they were kind of, along with Secret Sundays, the kind of the people who really kind of made warehouse parties like a bigger thing again. And crucially, after I think some illicit things, found the way to do them legally, because I think that's when the council started creating these temporary event notices, which you can get a certain number of a year as a promoter or a venue owner, and that lets you go till, you know, 6 in the morning. So Will started working with Rob and our office was on Curtin Road. I started working full time for him as soon as I finished uni, basically. Mm-hmm. And there was two car park spaces like adjacent to the building, basically. And they started managing them and doing all the bookings. And then everyone started sort of catching on to this sort of way of doing things. And yeah, there was loads of amazing spaces around there. And it was a very exciting time because it just felt like every weekend someone had discovered a new car park or warehouse, or and it was all sort of concentrated in the sort of Shoreditch Hackney area. So obviously now it's just like hen parties and stag do's, yeah. Sadly.
I loved how you'd always get in those warehouse parties. There'd always be a paddling pool with beer with beer in, you know what I mean? They'd fill the paddling pool with water and the beer cans would be
floating. I never saw that.
I feel like that was became a trope.
I think you went to, sounds like you went to like the proper illegal ones, and I went to the ones where they like very, got a license. I was amazing.
Very sketchy ones. The beer was always a paddling pool. I was like, yeah, this is the mark of a good,
nice
good party.
No, there was there were some amazing parties around here around that time. That was a very exciting era. But yeah, now it feels a lot more like things are a bit more permanent. Like a place will get a license, and that's the spot in North London or East London or wherever. But yeah, there's still plenty of good spaces out.
There's always stuff happening, isn't there? People write off, you know, electronic music. Journalists never miss the opportunity to say clubs are dead, mm-hmm. or dance music is dead, or whatever.
Or Beyonce and Drake have saved house music.
Right. Yeah. And there'll always be, you know, there is a human need to dance, to listen to music. Like, we're always going to find ways, maybe styles change or trends
Apple,
change.
Aforementioned Will Patterson, who I'm finally actually having lunch with this week, first time in ages. He's now booker at E1 in Shadwell, I believe. I think I interviewed him for something about like what was happening with like clubs in London shutting down years ago, and he said, you know, there will always be spaces, people will always find spaces, you just have to think a bit more creatively sometimes and look outside the box or look at doing different hours or whatever it is. But yeah, and there's also a couple of kind of secret invite only spaces going on. There's one in central London again that I want to check out, which I've been trying to go and have a look at for a while. But yeah, I think it's a good time, and you know, there were some small positives that maybe came out of the pandemic, just with regards to, you know, very sad how many businesses went under, but I guess some other businesses getting an opportunity. But you know, who knows what the distribution is of who lost out, and you know, usually the people who are in a position to take advantage of these opportunities tend to be people who are already more well off or comfortable.
Yeah, I think it's good to see parties in kind of different places as well, revolving kind of parties. My friend Andre puts on this night called We Got This in different places. Maybe if you're ever free, I'm sure he'd love you to DJ there.
I'll check it out.
I play some very bad indie and 80s music and stuff like that, but
nice.
You can be a proper DJ.
Okay.
We can get a proper DJ in.
Sounds good.
And it'll be nice to have some professionalism. But yeah, I think it's good. You know, people are putting on parties all the time in different ways and different places. And I've always loved that DIY thing as well, right? Like when people just go and do stuff, and it's just for the love, right? Not for the, you know, you get promoters doing it to make money, but ultimately a lot of the scene with music, I think, you know, you can tell when people are doing it because they love it, can't you?
Yeah.
You kind of know.
Yeah, and it's a double-edged sword to things becoming more professional. You know, I think the scene has lost like a bit of soul by, you know, becoming more business-oriented. But, you know, those organisations can be easier to deal with and more reliable than, you know, some of the old school promoters we used to know, potentially.
There's some characters, should I say.
Yeah, and there will always be people who are putting on parties because they want the money or the attention or the perceived glamour or whatever. Those elements always exist, and I think they just are a bit different. They are yeah, they're just different to how they used to be, but there's always yeah, that element.
And it's good to see, you know, people doing innovative things, like I wanted to talk to you, Ben, about your things you put on where people listen to albums in the dark.
Yeah, pitch back playback.
Pitch back.
I could see you were like, I don't want to try and pronounce it. I know. People have
pitch
a problem.
Black.
People,
why is that so hard to say? Pitch black playback.
It's just one of those sort of very mild tongue twisters. In although people find it difficult to say, I find that it does imprint it on their mind quite well. So I think it kind of it does the job.
It's brilliant. What led you to
It stretches back to when I was the editor of Data Transmission, which I think is how we met through Joe Gant somehow.
Indeed.
How did we meet?
I think it was through Joe. Yeah. I haven't seen Joe for ages.
I'm seeing him this week as well, actually.
Say hello to Joe for me.
Pass on regards.
Oh my God, it's a few stories involving Joe that
cannot be
mentioned in the podcast.
Definitely. I'll remind him about that.
Basically everything.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was...
So you were working at DT, yeah?
Yeah, I think I was actually kind of on my way out, or I just left, or I was about to leave. I got invited by Ninja Tune to a press preview they were doing for Amon Tobin's album iSam, and they were doing it in the Soho Hotel's screening rooms.
Ah.
And it was a thing where you came and sat down in like a nice armchair, and they played the album in sort of like virtual surround sound.
Yeah.
And they had some animations from the tour visuals up on the screen, so it wasn't in the dark, but it was like, come and listen to this and shut the fuck up and enjoy it and see what you think. And I'd never listened to music in that sort of environment before, with like, you know, speakers all around you and like being able to feel the sub really well, you know, sitting quite near the front, so that kind of helped. But I just thought this would be a great way to listen to like music, to listen to albums. And the initial idea, which is still part of what we do, but it's the kind of smaller part, I guess, is that I wanted to bring that exclusive experience that the press and industry get to have, where they hear the album before it comes out, to a small number of like super fans, basically, and find a way to, you know, make it at least pay for itself. So I started doing it, and the first couple I did, I just like hired out that same venue because I really liked it.
Yeah. For people that don't know, this is a screening room, which I've been to. It's very nice, underneath the hotel, isn't it?
Yeah, so they've got two.
Yeah, and it's where, you know, films are kind of shown often to press and distributors and stuff.
Exactly, yeah.
Very nice armchairs and quite a small cinema.
Exactly. Well, we used the bigger screen, which had like kind of quite normal seating. It was like 100 seats, but... Yeah. Yeah, so I did a couple of those where I just sort of paid for the venue and got labels to take a chance on what we do, because obviously we had no history, but I was like, look, we'll promote this for you. It's a nice thing. You can invite people to the band and the label. You can publicise it on your socials, give away tickets for free. I just want proof of concept, basically. So we did two of those. Big up to Simon Raymond from Bella Union, formerly Cocteau Twins, taking a chance on us and doing an Explosions in the Sky album premiere with us.
Yeah.
That was the very first thing we did. And so
great
I spent.
Band, yeah.
Yeah, really perfect for it. I mean, it's really takes you on a journey, man, that kind of vibe. Yeah. And you see all these crazy soundscapes in your head, so it was really very well suited to it. But I did a couple of years sort of trying to do those, and it was very slow progress because most people wouldn't take a chance on us. And then I started experimenting with doing classic albums, like back catalogue stuff, and did a couple of those, and they went really well, and then found a venue that were open to working with us and sort of splitting the money.
You did Nirvana, didn't you? Is that one?
We've done Nirvana, done Nirvana Unplugged, we did one for the recent remaster reissue 30th anniversary, and we also have done Nirvana Unplugged. But yeah, so once we started doing the classic stuff, like, it just started like getting momentum, and you know, it's grown from there, and it's now running regularly in London, Manchester, in Auckland and New Plymouth in New Zealand. We've done a bunch in New York and LA, and are just sort of looking at finding new venues there, but there will be more soon. We've been doing some stuff with Soho Houses in London and Paris, Nashville, Rome, Barcelona, and yeah, oh, Copenhagen we do regularly as well. Hopefully just found a new venue in Amsterdam. So yeah, it's growing slowly but surely, and we still do premieres. We do loads of back catalog stuff all the time, and yeah, absolutely love doing it. And there's also a spin-off which I created called Pitch Black Mixtapes, which is the same concept of you come and sit and listen in the dark to you know, an album that you love, but instead of that it's me DJing or like put a mixtape that I put together. Usually it's kind of on a theme now. The last one was like called Deep Space Voyage because it was part of the Castle Cinema in London's Summer of Sci-Fi season, and that gives me an opportunity to like tell a story through different artists and genres and moods, and intersperse it with found sound and bits from, you know, interviews and films, and yeah, just basically take the concept into any direction you want.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, Ben. We were talking a little bit before, weren't we, about how your attention span can be a bit of an issue these days because we're in this sort of always on world. And do you think that actually listening, Ben, in the dark does help you to pay attention? Do you think you maybe hear things in a different way? You hear more?
Absolutely, yeah. It's I always like to say that it's more than the sum of its parts. Like, it sounds, so, you know, you describe the idea to people and they either sort of get it or they don't. Mm. And I have to credit my friend Ben Davis, who's a great photographer, who actually helped me come up with the idea of doing it in the dark, because before I just wanted to do it, I hadn't really thought about the lighting. I just want to play albums in cinemas, basically. And he was like, I don't really get it, like, why, what the point is, like, are you going to do it in like pitch black darkness? And I was like, yes, that is it. So he's had a couple of lunches on me. I need to take him out again for sure. Yeah, if you need a wedding photographer, Ben Davis, weddingphotography.co.uk, something like that. Always have to plug
him. Look him up.
Yeah. But yeah, it's really can be very transformative. Not only, it's not just listening to it in the dark, obviously it you know, enhances your sense of hearing and everything feels more pronounced and intense, but there's also something about the physical space that the sound occupies in the room because of the sound systems we use and the way it's set up. Like, we upmix the stereo to surround sound usually, unless it's like a Dolby Atmos mix, which we're doing more and more of. But that means that some of the sound basically comes out of, you know, the rear and left and right wall speakers in the room, so you are kind of to some degree enveloped in it. But yeah, at its best, when it works well on kind of the right albums, it's sort of, you can't quite tell where sound's coming from, and it feels like, yeah, there's a very large physical presence in the room that's kind of more akin to like when you go and see a live performance than, you know, when you're listening on headphones, it's like all in your head and it's very introspective, and that obviously in itself is an incredible experience because you really are cut off from everything. But it's a less, I would argue, a slightly less natural way to experience music in a way, because we don't experience the world by shutting everything off and ramming the music source into our ears. We experience music together by listening to it in a shared physical space, which has certain architectural, you know, acoustic properties, and the room's been acoustically treated in a certain way. And some children are rightfully very sad about or excited by a dead bee on the floor. So it definitely looks dead, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. I don't think we can save that one.
No.
Yeah. There's the shared experience as well, isn't there?
Yeah.
You know, when you go to see a DJ, you go to see a live music show, that idea of going to an event, being there with people, that adds a certain something else to the experience as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, and people have asked us before about doing them on headphones collectively, and I always say I will never do that because,
no,
because you don't feel it. Yeah, it's like
silent disco is never
no,
a good idea.
Exactly. And yeah, like I say, it feels for me, and I feel I'm sure for other people as well, it gives me a slightly more subconscious feeling of like the feeling of being at a gig. And sometimes actually I'm at a gig and I close my eyes and I'm like, this is actually way better.
Yeah.
Because you're not, you know, you're so far away from them usually. And yeah, it definitely just makes your mind go in more intense places. And yeah, people come out and say, you know, occasionally people don't like it. but most people seem to really enjoy it, and some of the feedback we get is really amazing to hear. People like come out and they were like in tears, or they had like a spiritual experience, or they're just like very happy and very thankful for us for doing it. And I know a lot of people see the idea and they think it's some hipster nonsense, pretentious whatever gimmick, but it's really not. I do it because I love it. I started it because I wanted to hear all my favorite music like that, and there are thousands and thousands of people who've come and are profoundly moved by this simple but hopefully well executed experience. And especially in a day and age when, you know, in recent years it's been impossible to tour, and more artists are looking at the way they tour and finding it very unsustainable for the planet, I like to think it's the next best experience you can give people to seeing someone live. Yeah. People can't tour all the time. Some people don't want to tour. Some people are no longer with us, or they're ill, or they're very far away, or you live in New Zealand and, you know, you're missed off a lot of touring maps or whatever. So I encourage artists and labels and management to work with us to make more of their fans happier more of the time, and we can all benefit from it, and we can all find ways for it to work. And I am excited and committed to making the sound better and better, and, you know, I think we and the industry and the world is really just getting started. I think Dolby Atmos is like a drop in the ocean compared to like where it's going to be in, you know, 10-20 years. I basically envisage, and people have come up with this idea before, and it was, I think Stockhausen invented it, and had it at a world fair, like a sphere of sound where you're sort of sat in the middle and there's sort of speakers like all around you. That's basically what I want. I want to be completely surrounded by it, and for it to be possible for sounds to be moved away in like a way that will really...
Yeah, exactly. Exciting. It was at a world's fair or something, wasn't it?
Expo, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So let's walk back, Ben. And maybe if you can tell us some of the ones that you've got... coming up as well. You had Nick Cave recently.
We had Nick Cave this week. Yeah, we're still. When's this going out? So I know
it'll be too much. Probably about 3 or 4 years. No, less than that. But it will be. I think it will be. Maybe the start of 23, something like that.
So. Oh, in which case, I have no idea what we'll have coming up at the start of 23. Yeah. I'm working about 2 months ahead at the moment, sometimes longer, but I mean, in terms of what we got coming up, which people will have missed by the time this has gone out,
get in your time machine and go and see.
Exactly. Well, we'll do most of them again at some point. So we're just in the middle of doing we do lots of anniversaries, so we're doing the 25th anniversary of Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds of Boatman's Call. Just had that in London, and that's around the world at the moment, a few places. We're going to be doing the 15th anniversaries of Radiohead and Rainbows and Bon Iver's For Emma Forever Ago. We have
How was that 15 years ago?
I know, these things are always slightly terrifying. Working on some premieres. We're doing some things for Jamiroquai because they're reissuing more of his albums on vinyl. Mm-hmm. We're doing a collaboration with Bowers and Wilkins for National Album Day. We're doing an industry event with Bang & Olufsen to premiere Loyal Kana's new album, where a couple of our lucky fans will get to join. That's the main things on the cards, and then we'll just see what else comes up.
And I think it's interesting as well, talking about Album Day, actually this is celebrating the album as a form.
Exactly.
And I think the album is still got legs in it, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you know, people try and say like the albums are dying, kids don't listen to them anymore. It's like, well, they do if you make a good enough album. I mean, obviously, we all do some cherry picking and playlisting, and the trend has changed so that album listening is not the dominant form as it used to be. But there's obviously still a place for them, and it's important that me and other people find ways to carry on reminding people that they are worth giving your time to, and creating spaces where we can give people the time to just relax and actually appreciate an album in its whole. You know, a lot of people who come to our events say that, oh, I do this at home already anyway. So, you know, a lot of people do still do it. But yeah, you know, whether it's me or Classic Album Sundays or Tim's Listening Party, you know, all these sort of things are great. Yeah. And people always posting, like, things on YouTube, album reviews, and, like, looking back over classic albums and listening to them for the first time, if you've heard them before, stuff like that. So, yeah, the album is not dead. It's just being slightly revised.
Indeed, indeed. And just to finish, Ben, what's coming up for you? Have you got releases in the diary?
Yeah, there's, again, like, we're talking, when this comes out, what do I know? I'll have an EP on House of Disco Records, which is a great Irish label, which is called the Winter Garden EP, which is named after the room I play at in Sisyphos. And very excited, we've got a remix coming from Panorama Bar resident Massimiliano Pagliara on that, which he's currently working on, and can't wait to hear. So that should be out early 2023. Probably put out more stuff on Ten Snakes True Romance label. Well, my third EP, Desperately Seeking Something. And yeah, some edits for Analog Africa. And there'll be more stuff on my Monologues Records label.
Yeah.
And yeah, in terms of DJing that far ahead, I don't know, but I am working on something potentially quite big and international with one of the labels I work with. So,
watch this space.
Yeah, that will hopefully come to fruition, but I believe it when I see it.
As always, it's right. We're back at our bikes. Ben, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
For
thanks
talking.
For
I hope, yeah, I hope you enjoyed our little walk in the park today.
Very pleasant.
And yeah, it was nice, wasn't it? And yeah, I will see you soon.
Thanks a lot, mate. Cheers.
Cheers, Ben. Thank you. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Park Date. There's lots more where that came from, and there'll be more in the future as well. If you enjoyed it, please leave a review, good or bad, make them funny. I'll be reading out the best ones, and there'll be a prize for the one that makes me laugh the most. Name check some trees in your reviews and leave them wherever you get your podcasts from. Check out our website, parkdate.co.uk. And if you see me walking around in the park, come and say hello. I think that was the sound of someone sneezing. Yes. Thank you. Bye-bye. Coming up on the next edition of Park Date, I'll be interviewing myself.